One line from that video that I really like, but we'll come back to it in a few minutes, because if you haven't been here, or you're new, or sort of jumping in, or coming back from summer vacation and all those kind of things, a couple weeks ago we kicked off this series called Eros, and in essence, really, we're talking about all things related to Eros. Eros is the ancient Greek god of sexual attraction, so we're talking about love and dating and romance and sex and sexuality and all of those things. Because they're really important. Because we said, if you're here, we're sexual beings. Like, we are, we're sexual beings in our very nature. That's the way God made us, and so it's important to talk about these things. And the Bible actually has a lot to say about all of these things. And so, if you haven't been here, I would encourage you to go back and listen to the first couple of weeks. Because essentially what I did is I took a really long sermon and I broke it up into 4 weeks. And you're glad for that, because it would have been a really long sermon. But they all sort of go together. And so some of the things we said in the beginning, and then last week we talked about sex and intimacy and said several things about that. But today I want to ask a different question. And the question is simply this. What makes a romantic relationship work? What makes a romantic relationship work? How would you answer that question? If you had a 14-year-old that was beginning to think about these things, a little too early maybe, but you wanted to help them understand what makes a romantic relationship work, or you had a friend that was in their 20s and they were in a relationship and it was starting to get serious and they were asking, like, how do I make this work? Or you knew an engaged couple that was about to take this big step, or you knew a couple that was sort of in their first or second year of marriage and they were beginning to hit some new things that they were navigating, or even somebody that's been married for 10 or 20 or 30 years but goes through a new season in their relationship. In all of those sort of scenarios, what makes a romantic relationship work? Well, today, because I'm such an expert on romance, I'm going to give you a few suggestions. And then we're going to look at one virtue that I think we've lost. So let me start with just a few suggestions of how to answer this question. What makes a romantic relationship work? Number one, physical and personality attraction. Right? Kind of obvious. There has to be some attraction to the other person. And the truth is, it's very physical. So when you see somebody that you like, you're attracted to them, you think there's something about them and potentially the way they look or their attractiveness as a person. But it's not just in the way they look. It's also about their personality. When you get to know them, their personality is either going to make you more attracted to them or potentially less attracted to them as you get to know them. But there's something very sort of raw and human and earthy about that. And that's where it starts. There's just this sort of physical or personality attraction. And that's sort of the first thing that makes a relationship work. But there's a second layer. And the second layer is healthy character values. Healthy character values. That the longer you get to know someone, and many of us have experienced this, the longer you get to know someone, the more you actually see of their character. And you don't see that on the first date, right? You don't see that on the second date. You get glimpses of it, but character is something that reveals itself over time. And when two people have healthy character values, or they're at least pursuing that in their personal lives, because you never arrive, right? You never have like the perfect character. But if you're aware of character in your life and you're sort of pursuing, how can I be a person of character? When you have two people that are in that process and on that journey, and that really, really sets the table for a relationship between those two people to really work. Which means, if you're single and you're not dating anyone, and you would like to be dating someone or you'd love to be in a relationship, probably the most important thing you can do right now is just focus on your own character and your own growth as a person, because as you focus on your own personal character, you're going to be preparing yourself for maybe what God has in store down the road. This also explains why sometimes problems that people experience in marriage aren't about the problem necessarily between the two people. There might be conflicts or issues between the two people in marriage, but oftentimes that's just collateral damage from personal character issues. Because if you're not a patient person, that's going to bleed over into your relationships and potentially into your marriage. If you have anger issues, that's going to be a problem. If there's an addiction in your life you still haven't dealt with, that's going to shape your marriage or your relationship. If you're a prideful person, that's going to make a huge impact in your relationship. And so when two people are pursuing healthy character and they're dealing with those things in their lives, that, along with sort of attraction between them, is going to pave the way for a potentially healthy relationship that'll work. Now, there's a third thing. Here's a third layer, and that's compatibility. Compatibility in important areas of their life. And what are those important areas? Well, there's a whole bunch of important areas, but let me just give you a few. Finances. I mean, there needs to be some compatibility there, right? Because you're potentially, if you're going to give yourself to this person and spend the rest of your life with them, you're going to be spending money with them. You're going to be investing. You're going to be saving. You're going to be trying to get out of debt with them. Every decision you make related to money. And if there's not some similar perspectives there, then you're going to run into a lot of problems and issues. Family is another important area, right? Because when you marry someone, you're not just marrying that person. You're marrying their family, right? Married people, right? You're marrying into a family. And so if you don't have sort of some shared perspectives on how you're going to negotiate that, what it's going to look like for you to relate to their family and they to relate to your family, how you're going to do holidays together, all those kind of things, what kind of family you are going to create? What kind of kids and family you're going together shape? If there's not compatibility in that area, then you're going to run into some problems. And then another important area, so finances, family, and then another one, faith, right? If there's not some shared values, because you have beliefs, and you have convictions, and you have practices, and you have a way of life, and you have a way of understanding who God is and what your faith is and how that connects in your engagement in a community of faith or church or all those things, and that's important. And if the person that you're dating or that you're with or that you're trying to cultivate a long-term relationship with or maybe a marriage with doesn't share many of those values or those convictions, then you're going to run into some problems. The Apostle Paul wrote a bunch of letters. We're going to read some passages from some of his letters this morning. But he wrote one letter to a group of Christians in Corinth, and he said this super simply. You might have heard this before. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, he said, "Do not be yoked together with unbelievers." Now he's writing specifically to Christians, and then he says some really strong things about this that follow. But let me explain what he's saying here, because yoking refers to a harness that was put on two oxen. And so whenever two oxen were set about to plow a field or to pull some sort of hay wagon, we actually have a picture of this. This is a modern picture, so oxen are still used and yokes are still used. You put this huge harness on these oxen, and then it together pulls the plow or it pulls the hay wagon, and it allows them to go forward and do the work that they're called to do. But if you have a really big ox and a really small ox, and you try to hitch them together and you put a yoke on them, it's going to be unequally yoked because they're not the same size. And it's not going to allow them to steer properly. It's not going to allow them to pull them away. And actually, you know what happens when two oxen are unequally yoked? They go in circles. They just circle around and around because they can't actually go straight. And so what Paul is basically trying to say is, hey, if you link yourself to someone else in a really significant way, and he probably has an eye towards marriage here, if you connect or link yourself or yoke yourself to someone in a really significant way, but you have very different values or different beliefs or different practices or different ways of understanding how your faith interacts in your everyday life, or even different ways of approaching your finances or your family or all kinds of important areas, when you do that, there's going to be trouble. You're going to go around and around in circles. You'll never be able to sort of plow the field and do the work and be a part of a team that's doing something together. But if you're on the same page, and that doesn't mean you have the exact same opinions about everything, but if you're sort of in the same ballpark and you have some shared values about finances and family, especially faith and probably other things, then you'll be able together to do the work that it takes for two people who come together and give their lives. In fact, that'll pave the way for a relationship to really work. So, let's go back. What makes a relationship work? a romantic relationship. Well, the attraction piece, there's the personal values, and there's certainly compatibility in important areas. Now, there's all kinds of, I put an also, lots of practical factors here, right? Because we could listen to Dr. Phil, and he can give us lots of great tips about communication. Right? I mean, communication is huge. What if one person is really, really introverted, and one person is really, really extroverted? How do they communicate together? I have no idea. But Stephen and Kate have figured this out. And they're about to celebrate 15 years of marriage. So just go talk to them. And they will tell you how an introvert and an extrovert can try to love and communicate with one another. But that's important, right? Communication. Conflict resolution. How do you deal with conflict when it comes up? Spending quality time together. How do you make that a priority in a relationship? How do you make that a priority once you start having kids? And they seem to draw all your attention and time somewhere else. So there's all these other issues. And we could spend all kinds of time talking about very practical, important things that make a romantic relationship work. But I think there's one value. I think there's one virtue that if we don't have it, then we're missing something significant. We're missing something that should stand at the center of all healthy relationships. And it's a virtue or it's a value that I think has really been lost in our culture and lost in our society, because here's what we tend to do. We tend to focus on number one, right? We tend to focus, when we think about romantic relationships, we tend to focus on the romance or the attraction or the emotions or the feelings you feel when you're with someone that you're physically attracted to. And yet, the romance and the feelings and the emotions, those aren't bad things, those are important, those make the list, those should be there, but they don't have what it takes to ultimately make a relationship successful. Because what happens when you start to see the unattractive side of somebody, which, by the way, you don't see in the first 6 months of dating them, right? You don't see it because, one, they're hiding it from you, just like you're hiding your unattractive side from them, and you don't see it because you're both in the love fog and you don't see anything else except the emotions and the feelings and the romance and the passion and all the ooey-gooey feelings that you feel when you're with them. Which is why I tell people who are dating, you should wait at least a year until you get engaged or make a long-term commitment to someone, because in the first few months, all you see are the good things. But what you need to do is see someone go through a crisis. You need to be with someone when they lose their temper. You need to be with someone when they totally screw up and have to ask for your forgiveness. You need to walk through a difficult season with someone. And by the way, they need to walk through it with you. And they need to see you screw up. And they need to see you lose your temper. And they need to see your ugly and unattractive side. And this isn't just a dating thing, right? I mean, this could be a married thing. What happens when the honeymoon isn't as rosy and perfect as you thought it would be? And what happens when the first year of marriage is a whole lot harder than you thought it would be? And what happens when the kids come along and they don't make life easier, they make life way more complicated? And what happens when you hit that point 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road where you go through one of those seasons that you never could have expected or anticipated? And you see, emotions, feelings, romance, the physical attraction, it doesn't have the horsepower to pull you through those aspects of a relationship. So what makes a relationship work? It's not attraction in those ways. And it's not even necessarily compatibility or a breadth of healthy character values. In fact, I think there's just one value or one virtue that stands at the center of it all. And the virtue is fidelity. It's this word, fidelity. Not the investment firm, although that could help your relationship, but fidelity. And fidelity, in the strictest sense, is often thought of as not cheating on your spouse, right? I mean, that's the way we sometimes use that word. It's faithfulness to your spouse by not cheating on them. And so when someone cheats on their spouse, we call that marital infidelity. But it's not that narrow. It's so much more broad than that. In fact, let me give you a couple of ways or a few ways to think about fidelity. Let me give you a definition first. Fidelity is simply faithfulness that is selfless, steadfast, and sacrificial. It's a faithfulness to someone or something outside of yourself that's selfless, steadfast, and sacrificial. It's selfless because it's to something or someone outside of yourself. You make a commitment to someone or something or some cause outside of yourself, and you're not committed to them for your benefit, although you might get some benefit out of your commitment to them, but you're primarily committed to them for their benefit or for their good or for their sake. And in that way, fidelity, faithfulness is selfless. It's also steadfast. Fidelity endures things when things get hard. In fact, that's kind of the definition, right? When things get difficult or when things get hard, you stay loyal. You hang on. You remain committed. You hang in there and you persevere and you endure. And this is huge in romantic kinds of relationships, because again, we often think they're built on romance and emotion and feelings and all those things, but if that's all it's built on, it's never going to make it. And it's not because emotions or feelings are bad, right? They're good. And it's not because they're going to die one day. Don't hear that. Like, I mean, hopefully they'll continue, and hopefully you'll be just as in love with someone on the day you get married, and hopefully it'll just grow throughout your life, but it's not going to grow consistently. And it's not going to be there every single day of the relationship. And again, emotions and feelings just don't have the horsepower. They don't have what it takes to help you get through the difficult seasons of life. They don't help you get through the mundane seasons. There's a lot of mundane seasons and a lot of mundane times and a lot of mundane tasks in any relationship. And what's going to help you navigate those, and what's going to help you stay strong during those, it's going to be fidelity. It's going to be a commitment to faithfulness. It's going to be a commitment to say, I'm going to keep on loving this person or serving this person, not because of what I get out of it, or not because of how it benefits me, or not because it's always easy, but simply because I made a commitment. And I stood up and I said, for richer or for poorer, and for better or for worse, in health and in sickness, I will love and cherish till death do us part. See, you don't stand up on a wedding day and talk about all the ooey-gooey feelings you have. You stand up and you say, we're going to make a commitment to one another, and no matter how difficult and hard this gets, we're going to stay committed, and we're going to give it all we got. And that's hard. And many of us know that's hard because we've been through painful breakups or even divorces where we just couldn't hang on anymore, and we felt the pain and the difficulty that's wrapped up in that. And we can say, yeah, fidelity is huge to make any relationship work. It's selfless, it's steadfast, and at times that means it's also going to be sacrificial. It means not always getting what you want. It means compromising. It means forgiving someone, right? I mean, forgiveness is sacrificial. Forgiveness is saying, I'm not going to pay you back even though I want to. I'm not going to give you what you deserve. I'm not going to give you the silent treatment. I'm not going to be angry at you, even though I feel like you still deserve it. I'm going to let it go and sacrifice my willingness or my desire to pay you back, and I'm going to forgive you. That's sacrificial. It means you're a part of something bigger, and it means you're not just an individual person anymore. You're a part of one flesh or one couple or something that's bigger than yourself. And here's what that looks like. Here's what that kind of faithfulness, that selfless or steadfast or sacrificial, looks like in a relationship. It means being faithful to the other person in love and submission. Love and submission. There's a famous passage we often read at weddings. It's from another one of Paul's letters, Ephesians. He wrote to some people at Ephesus. It's from Ephesians chapter 5. And part of the passage goes, and you probably remember this, it says that husbands should love their wives, and wives should submit. Yeah, you know that part, right? Dan's like, that's right. And Britt just punched him. So, husbands should love their wives and wives should submit to the husbands. What we often lose is the fact that really love and submission are just two sides of the same coin. They're the same thing. He's basically saying, both of you should love and submit to one another. Because submission is basically just looking at the other person and saying, I'm here to serve you. I want what's best for you. This isn't about me, it's about me lifting you up. And when you do that for the other person and the other person does that for you, mutual love and submission, oh man. In fact, we forget that Paul says this at the very beginning of the passage. He actually says, submit to one another. Not just wives, both of you are loving and submitting to one another. And that takes fidelity and faithfulness, because that's a choice. Because there's days you don't feel like submitting or loving or serving, right? But you don't do it because you feel like it. You do it because you made a choice. And you're committed to that person. And you want to be faithful to them. Fidelity also means being faithful to the other person in sex and intimacy for those who are married. We talked about this a bit last week, but intimacy is inherently connected to sex. Because when two people have sex, they're sharing in something that's the most intimate thing two people can share in. And it essentially unites them together. It bonds them together. It makes them one flesh. And so we need, for those people who are in sort of committed marriage relationships, to ask the question, how can we be cultivating intimacy with our spouse in a way that's faithful to them and in a way that doesn't just mean don't sleep around with other people, right? That's how we think of fidelity sometimes. But Paul would say, no, there's a positive aspect to it. It's not just a negative, don't do that. There's a positive aspect. He wrote to the church at Corinth this long letter called 1 Corinthians, and he wrote about a whole bunch of topics. In fact, there's one chapter, 1 Corinthians 7, where he talks about singleness and marriage and divorce and sex and relationships, and he's addressing all these things because they're issues that the people in this church are dealing with. And we're not going to read all of it, but I'd encourage you to go home and read it, but I just want to read you one small section. This is what he says from the right in the middle of that discussion. He says, each man should have sexual relations with his own wife, and each woman with her own husband. The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. She's submitting her body, herself, to him. But guess what? In the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but he yields it to his wife. There's this mutual giving and submitting and supporting and loving and serving that's happening here. And then he says, do not deprive each other except perhaps by mutual consent. That mutual is important there. Mutual consent and for a time so that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again. So intimacy is huge here. Be faithful and support and serve one another's needs. And you're not in control of your body or yourself or this thing. You are just given. God gave you to support and serve and love this person. And when two people are submitting in that way to one another, mutually, oh man, it's amazing what can happen. What goes wrong is when only one person is submitting. That's when submission becomes abusive and hurtful and harmful. But when two people are loving and submitting to one another and in sex and intimacy and saying, how can we cultivate that kind of intimacy in our marriage? That's a commitment to fidelity and faithfulness. So, fidelity and faithfulness, it's about loving and submitting to the other person. It's about sex and intimacy, but there's one more I want to give you. It's also about being faithful to the shared work that you are called to do together. That there's this sense, and we touched on this last week, that when a man and a woman come together and they pledge their lives to one another and they unite, that they are fulfilling this sort of larger mission that God gave to all of humanity. And procreation is part of that. We talked about that a little last week. But there's a sense that they're coming together to create something outside of themselves. And the most obvious expression of that is in kids and a family. But it's taking this mandate, this mission that God gave us and saying, we're now a part of that in a unique way together. And it's being faithful to that. It's being faithful to that work, not just the other person. And that's why I love the video we watched at the beginning where she says the couple is the starting point, but then it ripples outward from this couple. And then she says this at the very end, and we'll put this on the screen. She says, we need to see marriage as a sacrifice. It is your own project for the world. In other words, you've given up sort of your project and your dreams and the way you think it's going to go, and you've entered into, because you've connected and united with someone else, you've entered into a bigger project for the world. And actually the word sacrifice, I think she could have actually said it's an investment. This is not really a sacrifice because you're giving up something that's probably not as big and great and amazing and fulfilling as what God has called you to be. So you're actually investing in this great work that God wants to do through you. Now, does that mean that singles can't engage in this project? No, not at all. Paul was single. And in fact, he even said at one point, he said, if you're single, be content with that right now, because you can actually engage this project for the world in a way that even married people and people with kids can't. You have resources and time and ways to invest in what I'm doing. So be content with where you are for right now, and then just trust in wherever I'm going to take you. Does that mean you can't be a part of this project if you don't have kids or you can't have kids? No. Paul was single. Paul didn't have kids. Jesus was single. Jesus didn't have kids. And I'm pretty sure he made a big difference on the world, right? But let's go back to the first question we started with. What makes a romantic relationship work? There's lots of practical answers. There's attraction. There's compatibility. There's personal character values we need to think through. There's communication and conflict. There's all those things that are really, really important. But if there's not fidelity, a commitment to fidelity at the middle of it all, that's got to be the foundation for any long-term healthy relationship to work. And you know why we know this? You know how we know that fidelity and faithfulness has to be at the center of any relationship that's going to work? Because the only way that you have a relationship with God is because he was faithful and because he had fidelity. Because he chose to be selfless. And he chose to save us. Not because it would benefit him. Not for his own sake and not for his good. But solely for our benefit and for our sake and for our good. Because he chose to be steadfast. And when we run in the other direction and when we rebel against him and when we abandon him, he keeps chasing and chasing and chasing after us. And he's relentless and he never gives up and his love never runs out. He just keeps being steadfast. And he's sacrificial. He sent his son to die on the cross for us so that we could be restored to be in a relationship with him. And so you want to know what fidelity and faithfulness looks like? Just look at the way that God loves each of us. I want to share with you one more verse from the Bible this morning, because there's this time in the Old Testament where the people of Israel have run as far away from God as they can run. They've abandoned him. They've forsaken him. They don't care about him. They don't love him anymore. And God decides to continue being faithful to his people, even though they're faithless towards him. And so he takes a prophet named Hosea, and he says to Hosea, here's what I want you to do, Hosea. Here's your message. You're going to live it out. I want you to go marry a prostitute. And she's going to cheat on you. She's going to give her body to other men. She's going to sleep around and not care. She's going to abandon you. And in the face of her faithlessness, I want you to continue being faithful. And that is going to be a picture for all of my people to see of how faithful I am to them, even when they're faithless toward me. In the midst of that, this is what he says through the prophet Hosea. He says, I will betroth you. He's speaking to his people. I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you in righteousness and justice, in love and compassion. I will betroth you in what? Faithfulness. Faithfulness. You see, that's who God is. That's how he loves us. With fidelity and faithfulness. And when it comes to him, all we have to do is accept that and receive that and embrace that. But if we want relationships with other people to work, especially if we want relationships, dating relationships or marriage relationships to work, then we need to make fidelity and faithfulness at the center of those relationships. And so the two final questions that I just leave you with this morning are this. How are you cultivating fidelity in your marriage? If you're married today, how are you cultivating fidelity? Maybe talk to your spouse about it. What does fidelity look like in our marriage? What does faithfulness to one another look like? And if you're not married, how are you cultivating fidelity in other relationships? Because this works its way out in all kinds of relationships. How are you cultivating fidelity in other relationships or even in dating relationships now that prepare you for whatever God has in store for you in the future? We're going to sing a song now about God's fidelity and faithfulness to us, because everything has to be grounded in that. So if you join me, let's stand and let me just pray, and then we'll sing together. God, we're thankful for this picture you gave. We're thankful for the sacrifice of this prophet Hosea, who illustrated the way that you love us, the way a faithful husband or faithful spouse loves their wife or husband. And God, thank you for helping us to see how important fidelity is and faithfulness. And help us to begin by just celebrating your fidelity and your faithfulness towards us. And then give us the courage to figure out how to live that out in our own relationships. Pray all of this in your name. Amen.